Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. People who like hot weather must have enjoyed the last few days, but for me, it was a little too hot, although I must say I really liked the wind. I found myself going out early in the morning or into the evening and enjoying the wind. I want to remind people that the KHOI mural, which was started during Art Walk, is still being worked on. So if you have an inkling to contribute to that mural, it's a community effort. You can swing by the station and paint a little bit because it's still up on the wall and it's still being worked on. The Ames Tribune today had a number of interesting headlines. There were cyclists racing through the streets of Ames over the weekend. There's a lot of orange cones out with traffic patterns being changed due to road work. And there was the Working Families Summit that happened, and that was their headline. And we talked about that on our last Local Talk show, which was Friday. We had a segment on the Working Families Summit, which took place on Saturday at the Scheman Center. And on Friday, we heard from Sue Dinsdale, one of the organizers of that summit. It was an all-day event sponsored by over 30 organizations, including the AFL-CIO and other labor unions, the American Civil Liberties Union, the Iowa Farmers Union, and the University of Iowa Labor Center, among many other groups. We're going to bring you some excerpts from the keynote speaker, Larry Cohen. He is the chair of the board of Our Revolution, the successor organization to Bernie 2016. In fact, he was an advisor to Bernie Sanders during his campaign. Larry Cohen has worked with many different organizations as a member and as an organizer. So let's hear a bit of what Larry Cohen had to say to the crowd at the Working Families Summit.
I can't give a shout out to everybody. I love being back in Iowa, but I do a new great friend, Jan Bauer, sitting in the back there, who's leads the Story County Democrats and is one of the other 20 people on the Unity Reform Commission of the Democratic Party. And all I can say is that we've met, meaning this commission has met twice in the last 2 months. It has a big mission, which is to figure out how this becomes a party that belongs to the people as a whole, that brings in new voters, not just as voters, but with new energy, with a sense that you can be new and you can lead, and that appeals to independent voters. I'm sure everybody in Iowa realizes the biggest group of voters in this country are independent, and then the next biggest, a bit back, are Republicans and then Democrats. So we have to, if we don't reach out to independent voters, what does that mean? We can't win. And I'm somebody who believes, and this whole talk is about, that that I believe and we believe that we can win. And win means winning for working people and for working families. It doesn't just mean this one's better than that one. It means actually, hey, we can get people engaged in this, in political action and community action, in organizing on the job, in building our unions, even in the toughest of times, because we believe that we can win. Win. We can win good health care. We can win good public education. We can win child care. We can win long-term care so that you don't have to be impoverished before you're on Medicaid for seniors. And this list goes on and on and on. We can make this list up together. Not just defense. So this word resistance in our country, and resistance is a big word to me, but resistance is not enough. It's not enough. We're not going to change what's going on in Iowa, but whether it's Iowa or anywhere in this country, We're not going to be transformational by resisting. We have to be transformational by presenting something that appeals to people, particularly those independent voters, particularly the 10% or more of Trump voters. It's not the majority of Trump voters, but the 10% or so of Trump voters. There are, in fact, working class voters. And how we think about uniting working families and with middle class families, whether we're black, brown, or white, what kind of language we have to use. How we have to be inclusive, as we heard from that panel this morning. This week from another country, we got a real demonstration of what it means when we say we believe that we can win. Yeah, yeah. Right? We believe that we can win. And as Jan and others here know, I mean, I'm big on saying, you know, I used to be a car guy. We look through the windshield, not the rearview mirror. Rearview mirror is small. So this isn't meant to say, let's look back on where we were 2 years ago, and I was honored to be with you then. And then I went on to work, as you heard, in the Bernie Sanders campaign as an advisor to him. He called me senior advisor. I would say to him, Bernie, you're a bunch older than me. I don't want to be called your senior advisor. So none of these comments are meant to rehash that, because we got to figure out where are we going, not so much where have we been, but learn a little bit from it. But huge parallels between the election in the UK on Thursday and what we might learn. Because my friends in the Labour Party in the UK, most of them were Corbyn folks. Many of them were saying, hey, we are fed up with being told that it's more austerity, more concessions, more giving up what we have as working families because of the global economy. That was a big reason for the Brexit vote among working families. It wasn't necessarily the greatest idea to leave the European community. But the overwhelming lesson from that vote a year ago was, same thing we hear across Iowa. I've been to Iowa a lot in that Bernie campaign, and that we should imagine as part of that positive vision of America that every kid who graduates high school should have a sense that I'm going to have a decent job. We should be able to guarantee that to kids in this country, that you're going to have a decent job, a job not at the minimum wage, but something that you can look forward to, that you can learn. And if not a decent job, that you go to higher education at a community college, and at the minimum, we'll provide that tuition free, like it was when I grew up in Philadelphia. You didn't have to pay to go to Philadelphia Community College. People went to UCLA, and there was no tuition. Or Berkeley, Brooklyn College, where Bernie went initially. No tuition. What is it that we have lost? What is it that we can learn in terms of real change is possible? And what is it that we can learn from Jeremy Corbyn? So it was a similar thing. He was way down in the polls and all this, right? And they put out what they called a manifesto. And that manifesto is something, you know, if we did a survey here, we would all sign on to that manifesto of Jeremy Corbyn's, because it's the same stuff that we're talking about. It's not our defense. We're not going to win on defense. We've got to win by saying, yes, we will fight for Medicare for all. We want health care. We don't want health insurance. We want health care. We're fed up with health insurance, where we pay $300 or $400 or $500 a month, and then we pay $4,000 deductibles. That's not health care. That's health insurance. We want health care. Everywhere else in the world, they have health care. And then you get the bills, and you can't understand them, because we spend 20% of our health care on the bills, on the processing, on the insurance. 20%. Why don't Republicans and independents think about that when we talk about waste? Instead of, oh, I want to cut my taxes and cut the government. Why don't we cut out the insurance companies? 20% is $1 trillion a year. $1 trillion. In many countries, that $1 trillion would fund health care for almost the majority of the population, a country the size of our country. And we don't seem to think that's waste, but yet government is waste. We've got to turn this stuff around. And we got to take these issues and put them together. Start out with issues like good, decent jobs. Yes, Fight for 15 is a clear part of that. And how we get to that point. And how we see that as those are our jobs. Those are our kids' jobs. Not those are somebody else's jobs. I have mine. We can't do just single issue politics. We have to figure out, as one of the speakers said this morning, how we knit these things together. How we go forward looking through the windshield about the rights that we're fighting for. And obviously, the rights of women to make up their own healthcare decisions is a core right for all of us, whether we're a woman or a man or transgender or anything else. But we can't just do one issue and hold it above all other issues. We've got to bring these issues together and build that kind of vision. That's what Corbyn was about. That's what this Labour Party was about. And even though when you read that manifesto, this comes back to, what are we fighting for in Iowa? How do we knock on doors and talk to farmers and talk to workers, talk to union folks, whether they're in a manufacturing plant or a service, a private sector service or a public sector service? What does our message sound like? And how do we break through? And how do we build a movement in Iowa based on hope and not fear, and based on what we can bring forward, not defending just what we had before? And that's what they were able to do in the UK. And the predictions were dire. This is going to be the end of the Labour Party. And instead, they gained 30 or 31 seats in that parliament. And so all the pundits who said, you got to be in the middle of the road to do well. Labor's got to stay in the middle of the road. This is the Labor Party we're talking about now. The middle of the road. It's my friend Jim Hightower, who's been here in Iowa a bunch of times, would say, and has said, the only thing in the middle of the road is yellow stripes and dead armadillos. And so we believe that we can win.
This is Local Talk on KHOI. You've been listening to Larry Cohen, who was the keynote speaker at the Working Families Summit, which took place in Ames on Saturday. Mr. Cohen was an advisor to Bernie Sanders during the recent campaign and is now the chair of the board of Our Revolution, the successor organization to Bernie 2016. He talked a great deal about the idea that resistance and protest is not enough to bring about change. And he also spoke in this next segment about the important role that Iowa has in the promise of a progressive agenda and bringing about change.
Again, resistance is great. But if resistance means all the people that have been on our side hit the streets, yes, that's great because that encourages us in a time of despair and discouragement. But actually, we got to figure out these 99 counties in Iowa, and I've said this a lot for years, one of the reasons I like coming here, if we can't figure out how to build that kind of messaging in Iowa, we're not going to figure it out anywhere else. Because more time is spent per person in Iowa with some 3 million people, I think, partly because of the Iowa caucus, than anywhere else. And it may be only every 4 years. That's not good, and you all know that in this room. We've got to figure out how do we build political organization of some sort on an ongoing basis. It's not about every 4 years. That may be important to the candidates that are running. We're not going to change Iowa that way every 4 years. And so figuring out this messaging about rural Iowa or the small towns of Iowa or the larger cities of Iowa and what works and cutting through this kind of message that some combination of division and despair and actual hate, because racism is part of this message, coming from this president and others in his party at this point, as we all know. And cut government and cut taxes and you're on your own. You know, that's their message. And we've got to continue to think through, okay, I'm knocking on doors. I'm in one of the rural counties in Iowa. How does that message correspond to the message, say, here in Story County? If we don't figure that out here, we're not going to figure it out in this country. On the other hand, if we do figure it out here, we're going to figure it out. Just heard about a bunch of the issues I think we have to string together to convince people that we can do a lot better and that we can be better off as well when we do it. We're not just doing it out of, you know, martyrdom or for somebody else or altruism. No, we're doing it for our families, but our families are our families. Again, being across the country and seeing a lot, learning a lot from that Bernie campaign, we did very well in rural areas, is a message of hope and authenticity and of community and of caring. Yeah, absolutely we can do that. And it does mean to have that authenticity, we have to deal with this problem of funding our political work, frankly, without corporate money. Yeah. And that's a challenge. And that's not easy. You don't have to be Jan Bauer or somebody on the DNC, and there's others here on the DNC, to understand the challenge of that. Because the other side will take dark money, wherever money they can get, and it's always, we hear on our side, more money, more money, more money, more money. But think about this. Maybe in Iowa we experiment. In the nominating process at least, is there a way we can say, wait a minute, we're going to set some limits here. Whether we're Democrats or independents, we're going to figure out how to set some limits here on candidates who are only here because they're self-funders. If we believe that we can win as working families, and if we believe that that agenda is pretty clear-cut, that we could do it in an elevator ride or running up the stairs here, you know, we could describe it. It's about caring. It's about community. It's about health care. It's about education. It's about decent work for every kid coming out of high school or a higher education where they don't be bankrupt at the end of it. And we go on from there. If we believe we can do that, we need to figure out how we build political organization, whether we're in a union or in a community group. As Kay said, I chair the board of Our Revolution. What we're experimenting with is to make it really easy for people to build groups. So any 10 members is a group, and they can be in somebody's house in rural Iowa, and they are. And a member is anybody who shows up at a meeting. So you showed up at a meeting in somebody's house, you want to be a member, okay, you're a member, there's 10 of you, now you're a group, you sign up, you're one of the 900 and something groups, in our revolution. And that, this is not meant as a commercial. We've got to do a lot of things, not just our revolution, but just an example. We call it inclusive organizing. And then we network those groups, and we take on national issues. We encourage people to do state issues, to work with groups like the Iowa AFL-CIO or ICANN or Iowa CCI, many other groups that are here, inclusive organizing, and figure out what we can do together. But the key is not just to have the roughly 70,000 Bernie voters that subscribe to our revolution in Iowa, not just to say, oh, we can send emails to those people and they'll contribute money. No, but to move away from that to say, no, wait a minute. If we're going to do sustained political work, people need to be in some kind of political organization. They could be in a Democratic club. They could be in an Our Revolution group. They could be in the political action group in a union, some kind of political organization with something that ties them together about a vision. And then how do we tie those groups together across Iowa? And how do we knock on enough doors in rural Iowa or go to enough meetings with in farmhouses that people come together in because they're organizing themselves, not people who don't live there doing it, so that we have the kind of political network that we're not starting over all the time, that we're building all the time, so that even in bad moments, like the legislature here, it's a bad moment, or the Trump government, right? Obviously a bad moment. So we have a message that's progressive and populist, that works urban and rural, and we're going to work on that. We're going to learn in Iowa how we can make that into some coherent network and not try to win elections in Iowa, whether it's for the Senate or for the governor or for the president in 6 or 7 counties. We got to learn lessons here, because if we're going to change things nationally, and Iowa is a key model, those other 92 or whatever it is counties, we got to figure that out. Win can't be defined as the next election. We're not a baseball team. And I come from Philadelphia. We have the worst team in baseball, so we're definitely not looking at the next game. And that's a trivial example. But we can't have that kind of mentality.
That was Larry Cohen, who was the keynote speaker at the Working Families Summit on Saturday in Ames. He had some interesting ideas about Iowa's role, in particular, in bringing about change in the political and social agenda in the country. Larry Cohen is now chair of the board of Our Revolution, the successor organization to Bernie 2016. And to get us into the next segment, we're now going to hear a bit of music. We're listening to Rebel Music by Bob Marley, and that is the theme song for a relatively new KHOI show that airs on Thursday evenings from 8 to 10. The show, called Rebel Music Radio, is co-hosted by Julio Camarota, a.k.a. Dr. J. Juan, and Alade McKen, whose DJ name is Mr. McKen. Julio is a professor in the School of Ed at ISU, and Alade is a doctoral student in the School of Ed. The show is a mix of music and politics, hitting all kinds of social justice topics, particularly those related to race and inequity. The hosts have an amazing knowledge of all types of music. They wow me with their songs every week. And the songs are chosen to contribute to the discussions of the social issues that are going on the show. In addition, they often have guests, either in the studio or sometimes Skyping in. And this Thursday, their guests, and in actuality their co-hosts, will be several students from Ames Middle School who will be leading the conversation on social issues that are important to them, and they'll be choosing the music. The students were part of a program that Julio and I ran at Ames Middle School this past year called YPAR, Youth Participatory Action Research. We were able to work with this group of 10 students of color, mostly African American and a few Latina students, at the middle school. The idea of YPAR is to hear from students whose voice is often unheard, with the hope of bringing about change. And as we know, because it's been in the news quite a bit in these past months, there are a number of racial disparities in the Ames School District. So projects like YPAR are important in learning what is going on that leads to these disparities and to hear from the students who are being impacted. So last week, four of the YPAR students who are going to be on Rebel Music Radio on Thursday night. They came into KHOY and talked about what they've been doing and about the show that we'll be on. We're going to be hearing from Mary Mundell, Malik Davis, VJ Williams, and Carla Torres. Thank you all for coming in. Welcome to KHOI.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Can one of you tell me what Youth Participatory Action Research is?
It's been a project that's been going around the United States since the 2000s, gone to different places such as L.A., Chicago, Arizona. It's kind of to help the students kind of get their voice out on topics that they want to talk about. And so they can help do research and then end up doing action to help change to their opinions.
Okay, and you've been doing that here in Ames?
Yeah.
And you've been particularly looking at things that are going on in your school?
Yeah, at Ames Middle School, like injustice, stereotypes.
Can someone else share a little bit? So what have you done with that? With what you learned?
Currently, we have presented at multiple conferences, one with our teachers at a development class, and then we have also gone to a statewide conference.
All right, that's pretty impressive. But what we really have you here to talk about is the fact that on Thursday night, you're going to be on Rebel Music Radio, which is a relatively new show on KHOI, hosted by Dr. Jaywan and Mr. McKen. And it's a two-hour show. It'll be on, as I said, Thursday from 8 to 10. And you are going to be on live, your group, I think maybe one or two other people that are here mm-hmm. with us today. But you're going to be on, and you're going to be working with the hosts of that show, the co-hosts of that show, in advance to plan the show. And my understanding is you've already started to plan it. Is that right?
Yes.
So I know the way Dr. Jaywan and Mr. McKen set that show up is they always have a theme for the show. Carla, I think you were going to tell us about the theme for this show on Thursday that you're going to do.
Yeah, we're going to be focusing on doing the youth's perspective on politics and all those kind of things that surround that.
So youth perspective. So that's a good fit for people who've been doing youth participatory action research. So that's your main theme. And then what are there are different areas within that?
Yeah, there's also, we're talking about the stereotypes of youth that older people have made about us that may be true, some aren't, most.
And you're going to talk about how they impact you?
Yeah.
And why did you choose that topic? Why do you all think that that's an important topic?
Because lots of times in the media, they portray the youth as lazy and kind of unwilling to do what they need to and not kind of take action. And we believe that's not true, as we've started this youth group and we really want to showcase how the youth is going to help change the world and help start political movements that we believe in.
Okay, so one theme is stereotypes that people have of youth. And what's another theme that you're going to be talking about?
Another theme is how adults are making decisions without thinking about youth's future and how they feel about it.
And can you give me an example of a decision that is important to you?
Climate change.
So what decision are you talking about, and why is that important to you?
I think what Mary was trying to talk about is the Paris Agreement that's recently been happening, how our current president is making decisions without thinking about the consequences that it's going to have and the lasting impacts.
Are there any other particular issues that you're concerned with?
We're going to be talking about immigration, too, and all that stuff that's been affecting us a lot, as in our families and people we know.
And congressmen and political leaders that we have in Iowa.
Any in particular?
Steve King, who is a representative, who said some things that not everybody agrees with.
And so, and these are the political figures that are representing you and making decisions. So you kind of want to get a message out to them. Maybe some of them will be listening.
Yeah, that's our hope.
Hopefully they are, so they know how we're feeling about all these issues.
Yeah, because we often don't hear how the youth are feeling about these issues. So it's great that you have that opportunity. Okay, and I think there's one more topic that you're going to be talking about on the upcoming show. Malik, do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about youth perspectives on controversial topics, such as like abortion, gun control, things like that.
And why did you all decide to include that topic?
I think it's because lots of times adults don't really think that we have a perspective or knowledge on those topics. And many times we absorb it from different sources, like media and our parents. And so I think it's really important that people know that we have a good understanding and where we're getting that information from.
And I think you have selected a song. Well, you've selected a number of songs that you're going to include in the show on Thursday night, right?
Yeah, we're going to be playing the song Blurred Lines. And we kind of chose it because it's controversial. It's talking about, like, date rape and stuff like that. And so we want – and it kind of fits in our controversial topics section that we're going to be talking about.
So, again, you are a group of eighth graders – former eighth graders, now headed out off to high school from Ames Middle School, and you've been part of this YPAR project, Youth Participatory Action Research. That's what's brought you together. So before we let you go today, I want to ask you each to tell me what this has meant to you. What have you gotten from, and what are you taking away from both the opportunity to participate in YPAR over the past school semester and also to now work on planning and being part of this radio show that's coming up this week. Mary, let's start with you.
For me personally, it's understanding certain issues and topics that are being thrown around and we didn't notice before, and also getting my voice out there to other youth students that need to know what's going on.
And Carla, what about you? What has this meant to you to be a part of this whole project and now doing the radio show that's coming up?
For me, I guess I'm personally affected by, like, all the immigration thing that's going around, all that controversy. And so it helps me kind of get all that stuff out and talk to peers and people who I know that I can trust on these kinds of issues. And it helps me. It's kind of like a therapy session sometimes. So sometimes we just get to talk about that kind of stuff, and it's calming.
Has it given you also more confidence in talking about controversial topics and bringing up questions on them?
Yeah, before, like, with some of my friends, even then I didn't really feel confident talking about that kind of stuff. But, like, here I know that they're not going to really judge me on it, so I'm really confident in talking to you guys about that kind of stuff.
And Malik?
For me, it's been kind of an outlet. I've been passionate about lots of these topics and things that have happened. And, you know, personally, things have happened to me, so I think it's a really great way to kind of put my emotions and my beliefs out there and then getting feedback on ways we can kind of change it and ways that we can help inspire change.
And BJ?
It's really helped me to be able to talk more about different issues that have been going on in our world and is helping me understand that there are others that really want to try to do something about it and how to be able to reach out to those other people. And to know that I can help change the world.
Impressive. You're all very impressive. So you started focusing kind of at the middle school level, and now through the upcoming show, you're going to be kind of expanding out to bigger issues related to politics and change that's needed on a more national or even global level. And that's a great opportunity for young people.
I think this is a really great opportunity, as many students and young people have opinions about these, but they don't always get a source or an outlet to speak about those issues. So I think this is a really great opportunity. And I think on behalf of everyone, we want to say thank you for allowing us on your show.
Well, thank you for being here. That was Mary Mundell, Malik Davis, VJ Williams, and Carla Torres, who were eighth graders at Ames Middle School this past year, were participants in a project called Youth Participatory Action Research, and will be co-hosting Rebel Music Radio on KHOI on this Thursday night from 8 to 10. I also spoke with one of the participants, Malik Davis, who's also a volunteer at KHOI. I talked with him a bit more and asked him to tell us in more detail what the Youth Participatory Action Research Project was. So let's hear from Malik. Tell me a bit more about the process of YPAR, Youth Participatory Action Research, that you went through.
In the very beginning, we were asked to get a song about injustice And with that, we kind of analyzed it and kind of took themes from that.
So from the songs, and you each brought in a different song?
Yes.
From those songs, you identified particular themes that were relevant to you as young people today?
Mm-hmm. And then we compiled those themes into a quite lengthy list, and then we broke it down into themes that we thought were most prevalent in Ames Middle School. And then from that, we broke into groups. We have three groups. The three groups are focused on injustice, stereotypes, and ignorance. Now, with that, that's where we kind of focused our research, and we made problem trees to kind of identify what causes this and where that fits in with Ames Middle School.
And you had discussions about these issues yourselves. What other kinds of data did you collect?
Well, after we did the problem tree, we did field notes, which was our own personal experience where we wrote down what we saw, how we felt, and things like that. And then we kind of talked about it. But I think the best information and the best data we got was from open group discussions where we were collectively sitting, talking about personal experiences, because one person's experience kind of sparked an idea or something that happened to us, and so that's where we kind of got most of our data and information.
Mm-hmm. And then you invited other students who were not part of YPAR, in for some focused discussions as well, and they represented all different segments of this population, different races, ethnicities, genders, mm-hmm. because you wanted to get their perspectives?
Yeah, that was our goal. Our goal was to take our perspectives and kind of compare and contrast them with people who didn't experience what we experienced and see if they noticed the same things or if they experienced that or how they felt, so we could kind of get a deeper understanding of what was going on.
Can you give an idea of what some of the concerns that you noticed at the middle school were?
Well, first, lots of the students identified favoritism, as they said. And they noticed that certain teachers would have friend groups, I use that term loosely, of students. But once looking at who was in that friend groups, we kind of understood, well, it's not just favoritism. There's a deeper understanding and there's a deeper kind of theme that's going on. And we really understood that some of these teachers had prejudice against certain students because of gender or skin color or socioeconomic status. And so I think it was a new experience kind of looking at how students didn't see everything the way we did and kind of only took it for face value. We also really noticed many teachers kind of associated students of color with kind of synonymously the bad group and the kids that got in trouble a lot.
So teachers were almost prejudging students and kind of assuming that students of color were the more likely ones to get into trouble or not do work, etc.
Yeah, and then that kind of brought us back into the self-fulfilling prophecy when we were talking about how when teachers kind of have this prejudice and this assumption about students, how students kind of undertake that and they kind of believe it themselves and they kind of fall into this never-ending cycle of just doing everything that they were told, that they're not good enough, they're not going to get good grades, and kind of perpetuating that stereotype.
And is the hope that this project, YPAR, will continue next year, both at the middle school and you'll be on to the high school? Do you hope that it continues there?
Yeah, I think a lot of my group members, and especially me, really want to further develop this and possibly connect it with the middle school and really go into high school and then possibly just connecting it with other people and other people in the community.
That was Malik Davis, a student in Ames. It's interesting that there's research that's been done in many locations that supports what the students at Ames Middle School noticed. For example, the idea of differential expectations and discipline for students of color. That's related to the idea of implicit bias, which there was a workshop on at the Ames Library recently. And the idea of a self-fulfilling prophecy is a well-documented phenomenon in education. So it's clear that these students experience and notice some serious stuff, and we can all learn from listening to them. And you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And we have some new guests in the studio with us right now. We've been joined by Keith Morgan.
Good morning.
Good morning, Keith. Thanks for coming in for your monthly spot from the Story County Emergency Management agency. Is it an agency?
Yeah, we're an agency.
Okay. And I'd like to welcome your guests as well, Betty Bocella.
Good morning.
Hi. And Steve Frickholm.
Good morning.
Okay. And you all are going to be talking with us about work that the Coalition for Disaster Recovery has been doing. And so, Keith, I'll start with you. Go ahead.
Well, we've got an umbrella agency that works together with all the different volunteers we have across here. They are my focal point, my entry point into the volunteer world. And
that's the Coalition.
The Coalition for Disaster Recovery.
Mm-hmm.
It's one-stop shop, and during a disaster, activating the volunteers is very important, but we have a lot of different things going on. So this agency was put together, and it works together to prepare all the volunteer organizations to come together. They come together, they respond, and even after a disaster, they're there to try and meet the unmet needs of those that may have been affected by the disaster. And one of the first areas that we tried to focus on is sheltering, because right away after a disaster, it's necessary to get those that have been impacted out of the weather and safely sheltered. So we came across this idea of that being the first task, which Betty took on.
So is this what's called the Rapid Action Teams for Shelters, RATS?
There are RATS, yes.
Okay.
And Betty, if you can go ahead. She's the one that came up with the concept of calling them RATS.
Yes, I did. I just like to clarify just a couple of things so the listeners aren't confused, Gail.
Okay.
And as Keith talks about volunteers and volunteer agencies, what we're really talking about are service clubs in local communities, churches, other nonprofit organizations from where volunteers come. So not to be confused with agencies that are about volunteer coordinating, like the Volunteer Center of Story County or RSVP.
Okay. So those are organizations that many of our listeners might already be a part of.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes. And those two organizations are part of the coalition, but the vision for the coalition is really to draw in those other folks, to organize, to understand what their role could be mm-hmm. in disaster. And I've been around since before Keith was born in terms of the coalition. And it's really been interesting over the last 13, 14 years it's taken a long time to get where we are today in terms of really enlisting local people more. Because we don't have disasters every day. And,
sure.
You know, it's difficult sometimes for people to get excited about something. But
something that you hope never happens.
That's correct.
Yeah.
You know, you recruit volunteers and say, I hope we never have to call you.
Yeah.
But, and so that's our challenge, which is a whole nother topic, is keeping volunteers engaged. So the RATS concept, the concept actually is credited to Keith. He had an initial conversation with a staff person from American Red Cross, from our central office in Des Moines, and talking about the need to have a more immediate, quicker response in setting up an emergency shelter here in Story County rather than waiting until people could get here from Des Moines or wherever. So he handed that idea to me, and I mean, what an easy name, RATS, Rapid Action Team for Shelters. So the concept is to train local people so we don't have to worry about waiting for someone to come from out of county to be able to set up an emergency shelter, be prepared to receive those folks that need the shelter, and then be able to hand it off, transition it to Red Cross when they arrive. We're hopeful that here in Story County, it would take anywhere from 4 to 12 hours, somewhere in that range. For the Red Cross to arrive. So it's really important for us, the coalition, to be able to tell local city governments we can do that more quickly with the RATS concept.
And so you're really kind of getting ready for when the Red Cross, the professional kind of people, I know they use volunteers as well, get here.
Absolutely. It's a volunteer-based organization as well. And actually, the training that we have developed, I've been working with the Red Cross staffer from Des Moines. The training that we've been developing that Steve has gone through is a Red Cross training. This is a something very new, this concept, here in Iowa. And Red Cross is very interested to see how this might work. So as Red Cross has changed and restructured over the years, their response time in some areas could be fairly lengthy. So we're really hopeful that this will work.
Is this something that's been done elsewhere, or
not to my knowledge, Keith?
Yeah,
we're on the cutting edge
in so many ways.
No, as I understand it, it's not being done in Iowa. I do know that, and so Red Cross is very interested and very much a part of this. It's not just something that the coalition or emergency management is going off and doing, because the Red Cross is part of the coalition as well, and so we're just taking a little more leadership in it. In helping to develop the concept.
And you had an exercise to test this out, is that right?
We did. We put together the concept, but plans are no good if they haven't been tested, and exercising is testing. So what we did, what Betty did, is developed an exercise up in Story City, which is an area where we've been having pretty good success with this. And we simulated that a northern part of the city had been impacted by a tornado up there. And what we were looking at is some of the more mundane stuff. How can you get hold of your members rapidly? How long does it take them to get together? And how do you get things set up? And that's where we took the structure the Red Cross has, and we kind of trained them on that, so it would be almost seamless all the way from getting it set up to people arriving to getting the shelter going, and then even tearing down the shelter and putting everything back to the way that it was. We started it at about 8 o'clock with the pre-exercise stuff, ran it on through 11:30 to almost 12 o'clock, and we had really good success on it. And I think Steve can talk to some of what they learned from the exercise. It's one thing to go through training, but it's another thing to actually have to do that. And Betty had some little things up her sleeve that she threw at him that was kind of interesting.
Just a quick note before Steve talks. The church that Steve pastors, Harvest Evangelical Free Church, had already been a designated shelter location for the Red Cross. It's a wonderful facility. In fact, the Red Cross staff person looked at that and said, oh, wow, if we could have this in every community. So that's how his church got involved, because it was already a designated shelter, along with one other church that we'll approach next. So, Steve.
Yeah, this was a really unique exercise for all of our volunteers, and they were excited to become rats, to be a part of this. Just another way for us to engage the community and help out where we can. But we learned there were a lot of case study scenarios, like people from this made-up scenario would come in with pets, and what do you do with pets in a situation like this? Because we can't have folks that are scared of pets, or you don't know if that pet could bite someone or whatever. We don't know. So what do we do with those situations? What do we do with folks that have various mental health issues? What do we do with folks that have very visible injuries? What about folks with restraining orders? You know, all of these different case scenarios that our volunteers had to quickly kind of on the spot figure out what to deal with. So the training itself was very informative and educational for our volunteers as well.
So did you actually stage some of those types of people coming in and kind of thing?
Yeah, Betty had some very good scripts for a lot of these volunteers that were
But it was entertaining.
Things that, you think, oh, people are just going to come and everyone's going to be, you know, treated this way and it'll be comfortable and so on. And you don't think about all those unpredictable aspects of humanity.
Correct. Yeah. That was probably our biggest learning from this whole training exercise. And also just how well do we communicate as a team, and how well do we communicate with some of the other volunteer organizations that are all a part of this. We had the Jeep Club there. We had the Radio Club there, a lot of different volunteer organizations to coordinate with. And so on the one hand, it was really neat just to find out. I didn't even know we had a Jeep Club here in Story County. So that was really a cool thing for us as well. But overall, I think the team handled things well. We learned a lot about what potentially could happen in a disaster and then how do we respond. So very well done.
Were there particular things that you learned, particular lessons that now you're going back and focusing on what you'll do about those?
One of the things that is really essential after an exercise is to have a debriefing.
Sure.
So actually that morning for the last 45 minutes, there were 29 participants in the exercise, and we all came back together, and each of the groups, like the Emergency Radio Club, the Iowa Jeep Club, the RATS team, Red Cross, RSVP with their phone bank, they all had lessons learned. And you're always seeking for ways to improve. There was discussion amongst those groups individually about policies or procedures that might need to change. What we do well? What didn't we do so well? Strengths and weaknesses. Then all of that information comes together in a written report. And then we'll also follow up and discuss those points at our next coalition quarterly meeting, which happens to be next week. And also from that, we might learn, oh, you know, the RATS need a little more training on this area, or the Jeep Club needs a little more training or workshop on this area. So it's not just a one-time thing and boom, you're done, but you really try to extract from it those things that'll help you get better the next time.
We, you know, very specifically, I learned a lot from the Jeep Club. First off, when we have a mass care trailer that when we hauled it and opened it up, it was wet on the inside. Well, the vent cover.
What is a mass care trailer?
Full of cots and screens and things like that.
Okay. And you can transport them to
wherever
you need to set
them
up.
So it could be E Free Church in Story City or a church down in Maxwell. But the vent cover had completely disintegrated on it, and if we hadn't done the exercise, we would have never known that. Little things like, gosh, these are heavy cots. Wouldn't it be good if I had a transport dolly so I could move the stuff inside? So from that, we've gone through and we've translated those lessons learned using a little bit more grant money. We've better equipped our trailer so that it'll be more efficient in getting things set up at the time. And again, you can have plans, but until you actually go out and do this. Mm-hmm. And it took a lot of effort on these volunteers. It was a Saturday morning that they could have been doing something else, but it's really impressive to see these volunteer organizations come out willing to take their time to be able to help out their communities through this training, because there's no way that we'll be able to get better if we don't spend a little bit of time and get the organization together now.
And Steve, could you say a bit about why your congregation decided to get involved in this and become trained as RATS and offer your church as a shelter site?
Sure. Well, as Betty said, we are already a designated Red Cross shelter site. But when she contacted me and got together and explained what this concept was all about, I knew immediately there were folks in our church congregation that would gravitate to this. We have some nurses. We have some other folks that are just geared towards these types of scenarios. And so and already have folks that have been trained in some way or another in disaster relief in other areas. So it was just kind of a natural fit for us to be a part of this.
And how many people would you say from your congregation were part of it?
About eight.
Plus lots of other volunteers from other organizations.
Correct, yes. Okay.
And how does the coalition train the volunteers? How, when, how much? What does that entail?
For the RATS specifically?
Yes.
The training, I think, Steve, it was just, it was a Sunday evening and for about 2 hours. And Chrissy Brisley is the staff person from Red Cross, and she pulled from their regular multi-hour training for shelter volunteers, just the highlighted things that the RATS would need to know, exactly what areas need to be set up in the shelter for sleeping, eating, information, registration, where to put the signage inside and outside the facility, what documentation needs to be available and ready to go. They were trained on how to use about four different forms. The first one primarily is a registration form, how to complete that on each person. So the training was very basic. And again, in that training, talking a little bit about some of those unusual situations that might come up, as Steve mentioned, regarding the pets and people with medical or mental health issues. And so that was touched on. I think the challenge now for rats, and I told Steve's team, not only are they rats, but they're also guinea pigs, because this is the first time that we have done anything with the rats. And I think the challenge now will be to try and offer, these are very busy people, try and offer maybe something 6 months down the road, another kind of training, perhaps talking about a little bit more about mental health issues and how to deal with folks with those issues. So again, keeping those volunteers engaged, and then looking towards some another exercise a year from now, a little simpler format, perhaps, maybe just talking it through around the table. But again, just keeping the rats interested, bringing them any changes coming down from the Red Cross. That's my challenge, is to do that now, is to help keep those volunteers engaged.
And Story County is a pretty big geographic area. Do you have to do this in multiple sites, or are you ready to do this in different areas within the county?
Well, we're looking to expand this to pretty much have at least one rat, one set of rats within the four quadrants of Story County. What we'd really like to see is each community embrace this concept and have their own set of rats within there. And Betty's been working really hard with the mayors to try and get a representative that is a community volunteer liaison, essentially, to the CDR. And working together, we can make it so that we can take care of ourselves and not have to rely on somebody else, because if you take care of yourself, if somebody else doesn't step up to it, you're still able to take care of you and those around you. So I think it's essential that every community really start thinking about this and start to come together to be able to react in times of disaster.
Well, every time you come in, Keith, I'm always amazed at how much behind-the-scenes work is going on to be ready for these kinds of things, as you said, Betty, that we hope never happen.
That's right.
But I know, for one, that I feel confident that Story County is ready to help people when these kinds of things arise. Thanks for that. But before we let you go, Keith, we want to have you talk a bit about heat safety now that our first heat wave of the summer is here.
Yeah, there wasn't much of a transition between cool to heat, and people really need to be thinking about this. And there's two different parts to this. There's the short-term issues when it comes to heat. We always hear about it, the pets left in a car, even children being left in a car. If you yourself don't want to sit in that car with the windows almost rolled up and without the air conditioning on and everything else, don't do it to anybody else or to your pets. Just don't take them along the trip, and just don't think to yourself you're just going to run into the store and come back out. Something happens. What if something happens to you while you're in the car and nobody knows that either your pet or your children are out there? It's just not a safe thing to do, especially in these high temperatures we have. The temperatures in your car will go up very, very fast. So that's the first thing. The next thing is if you're going to be outside, if you're going to be doing anything, working or exercising, try and acclimatize yourself to this new heat. Like I said, it transitioned over pretty fast. Don't think that if you were running at noon before, you can now go out and run at noon. Start off, even this morning was 70-some degrees, which is quite a step up. So acclimatize yourself to the temperatures. And hydrate. Drink lots of water. We were talking about having coffee when we first got in here, but switch over and force yourself to drink a lot of water at these times. You don't realize how much you are losing that sweat, losing your hydration through sweat and perspiration. If you're starting to feel the conditions of the heat on you, and you don't have air conditioning at home, try and select some other place, maybe a library, some other public facility that you can go to and cool yourself down during the most prominent times of heat during the day. So that's the short-term stuff. The more long-term kind of stuff is UV. Put that sunscreen on now. You'll go outside and you'll think, oh, well, I'm just going to be outside for a little bit. I'm one of those that's guilty. I'm just going to do a little bit of work, and next thing you know, I've got a pretty significant sunburn on the back of my neck. For those of you that don't want to to have somebody else put it on you. They've got the spray stuff now. You ought to be able to cover yourself completely. Don't be shy with it. Put it all over. Make sure that you are completely covered with the sunscreen so that you don't have long-term health effects from it. We'll continue to monitor the heat. This can always transition into, and the stuff that I did see says that there is a chance that we may have reduced rainfall. So let's make sure and start thinking about our water usage.
Very important tips. And thanks again to all of you for coming in and filling us in on what's been going on. We've been talking with Keith Morgan, the Emergency Management Coordinator for Story County, and his guests Betty Bocella and Steve Fricombe. Thanks again for being here today. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows on our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Thanks, Cynthia. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. So please support KHOI. It's very easy to donate or become a member. Just go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.
This spring, KHOI asked you, our loyal listeners, to help us raise money toward our operations expenses. Thanks to your generosity and that of several premier donors who established a matching grant, we were able to exceed our fundraising goal. Because of your support, we are able to continue serving Central Iowa through the broadcast of community ideas and values for the foreseeable future. If you would still like to contribute to KHOI, give us a call at 515-292-2878 or visit us online at khoifm.org and click the donate button. Thank you again for making KHOI a reality in the heart of Iowa, and we'll see you again on the radio.